Let's open our Bibles to Acts chapter 21, where the Apostle Paul has arrived at Jerusalem, evidently before Pentecost of the year 57 on the Christian calendar. That year would be the 25th anniversary of the birth of the church, and Paul seems to have wanted to be in the city for that particular anniversary. He had originally intended to turn around and head back to Rome and then off to Spain, but on the return trip from the third missionary journey, he seems to have been repeatedly told by the Holy Spirit that if he goes to the city of Jerusalem, he will end up under arrest. And the Apostle Paul even seems to assume that there might be death involved in him coming under arrest. So he has gone anyway, despite Luke and others begging with tears in their eyes for him not to go. So once he gets to Jerusalem, he meets with James, the Lord's half-brother, who is the apostle to the church at Jerusalem. He's been the spiritual leader of the Jewish church since its inception, so that's been the last 25 years, and with the other spiritual leaders of the church. And Paul gives a missionary report. He talks about the work that he did at Ephesus and Philippi and also probably the time he spent at Corinth recently. He maybe talks about the letters that he wrote, 1st, 2nd Corinthians and Romans. Maybe he even gives them a copy of those things. But he gives a full report on all of his work as the apostle to the Gentiles. And the church is glad for that. They are excited by that. But they are also concerned about a rumor that is being propagated. And that is listed in verse number 20 of Acts 21. They said to him, "You see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews of those who have believed." Now, every year during the holidays, like Passover, Pentecost, and Feast of Tabernacles, Jerusalem swelled up to over a million people milling around, coming in for those special holidays. And amongst those, there are thousands upon thousands, perhaps several tens of thousands of them, that are believers in Jesus. And yet, James and the others say, they are all zealous for the law. So they believe in Jesus, they accept all the prophecies, they've been immersed into his death and his resurrection, all of that. But they have continued to worship on the Sabbath, rest on the Sabbath, keep the kosher laws, do all the things related to clothing and procedures of that nature, circumcise their children on the first, on the eighth day of their life, all of that. And so they continue by saying this in verse 21. "They have all been told that you teach all the Jews that are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or to walk according to our customs." So that's the rumor, that Paul is out there telling Jewish people, if you want to be saved by Jesus, you have to give up your Jewishness. You have to quit circumcising your baby boys. You have to quit keeping kosher. You have to quit Sabbath keeping. You have to be a Gentile to be saved. Now, he has not been teaching anything of that whatsoever. He has been teaching against in the idea of the Judaizers. Remember, that false teaching was, you Gentiles, if you want to be saved by Jesus, have to convert to Judaism. You have to start keeping the Sabbath day. You have to keep kosher. You have to circumcise your baby boys. You have to do this. You have to do that. Everything that the Pharisaic mindset of Judaism taught, the Judaizers believed Gentiles had to do that in order to be saved. And Paul has been very vocal against that. It's written in several of his letters, particularly in the book of Galatians. So this rumor is way out of kilter. It is off the wall. And I think James and the others know that's the case. And so they have a recommendation how to stifle this, how to nip this in the bud. Verse 22, what then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you've come. Do therefore what we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. The vow that they're under appears to be a Nazirite vow. Take these men, purify yourself along with them, and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads. Now, it just so happens the Apostle Paul has been taking Nazirite vows whenever he goes on his missionary journeys. We know that he cut his hair at Kenchrea, and that was not just a stylish haircut. It was clearly him finishing a Nazirite vow, and his intention would have been to carry the hair clippings with him to Jerusalem and to go through the purification ceremony during which the hair clippings are burned up. So James, perhaps knowing that that was Paul's practice, says, we've got four guys that are just now finishing their own Nazirite vows, and they're going to go through the ceremonies on the Temple Mount. Paul, you take them up there. You sponsor them. You pay for the sacrifices that are going to be offered on their behalf each day. You do that, and that will prove that this is nonsense. This is the way it's written. Thus, all will know that there is nothing in what they have been told about you, but that you yourself also live in observance of the law. Now, the Apostle Paul is not going to have a problem with this, because doing things traditionally is not the same as believing you're saved by them. So there is nothing wrong with a Jewish person continuing to keep kosher or even offer sacrifices as a thanksgiving to God and believing that they're saved by Jesus, not by any of those actions. So the recommendation, I think, is quite sound, and it is not contradiction whatsoever of anything the Apostle Paul has read or written or said up to this point in his ministry on this topic. Verse 25, but as for the Gentiles who have believed, now this is where they give him assurances. We are not trying to be Judaizers here, Paul. As for the Gentiles who have believed, we have sent a letter with our judgment that they should abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols, from blood, and from what has been strangled, and from sexual immorality. That's a reference back to Acts chapter number 15, when Paul met with this same group and appealed against the Judaizer heresy. And the church gave a very clear letter on the topic that Gentiles believing in Jesus are not required to do anything in the Jewish law to be saved. The only thing that was going to be, you know, pushed on them would be things that are universal to all mankind, things that come from the book of Genesis, well before Judaism came into existence, and things that have a particular connection to Gentiles habitually not doing these things, or excuse me, not obeying those universal commands from the book of Genesis. And they were sacrificed to idols, because Jewish believers, Gentile believers in Jesus, should not be worshiping other gods and goddesses and eating at those fellowship dinners in honor of those gods and goddesses. Remember, Paul already addressed that when he was writing to the Corinthians and to the Romans. They're supposed to abstain from blood, meaning the animal needs to have been bled out, its arterial blood needs to have been bled out. And you don't get involved in blood ceremonies, like smearing yourself in blood or eating blood in order to soak up the power of the animal. And from what's been strangled, because that also is where the animal has not been properly butchered to have its throat cut. And from sexual immorality. Sexual immorality being the idea you don't cheat on your spouse and you don't engage in sexual activity that is outside the boundaries of God's design. One man, one woman, together for a lifetime. It's not that hard to figure out. All of that from the book of Genesis, all of it intended for every human being. James and the others are saying, Paul, we've already made it clear that Judaizing is not appropriate. And you remember we sent out a letter to that effect. So, verse 26, Paul did take them in. And the next day, he purified himself along with them and went into the temple, giving notice when the days of purification would be fulfilled and the offering presented for each one of them. So apparently there were some logistics involved. You go in and you get your name put on a list as to what you're going to be doing as the fulfillment of your Nazirite vow and when it's scheduled to be finished in your ceremonies, and probably paid some money in order for the sacrifices to be offered at the appropriate time on their behalf. And the time period involved in this is 7 days. Verse number 27. When the 7 days were almost completed, the Jews from Asia, so these are people that knew Paul and the people around Paul from back in Ephesus. Remember, he spent the last 3 years ministering there. And many of these guys in Ephesus have traveled here to Jerusalem in order to be here for Pentecost. So the Jews from Asia, seeing Paul in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who is teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law and this place. And moreover, he's even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled his holy place." So these guys explode with the rumor that Paul has been out there telling Jewish believers all over the world that they have to become Gentiles, that they have to give up their Jewishness. Now, he's not been telling them that. But that is the rumor that these guys are exploding here onto the scene of these religious tourists that are in the temple on this particular day. Specifically, they're saying that he's talking against Judaism, but he's also talking against the law, which to some extent that is true. He is teaching that you're not saved by the law, but rather by Jesus Christ. And they also say that he's teaching against this place, meaning the temple where the sacrifices are offered. And there might be a little bit of truth to that in a way, because Paul certainly has been teaching that the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away your sin. Only the Messiah can do that. Only the Messiah dying on your behalf can do that. And he may have also been teaching a little prophecy along the way, and prophecy teaches that the temple will be destroyed and be no more. So there's a lot of nuances to what these guys are slamming here against Paul. But the big thing is a lie, an outright lie. They say that Paul brought non-Jews, Greeks, into the temple complex. Not just the court of nations, which Gentiles are allowed to go into, but beyond the little barrier that surrounds the shrine building area, where only Jewish people who are ceremonially cleaned are allowed to pass. And so these guys just lied that Paul has violated the special Jews-only section of the Temple Mount. And the reason they did this is because of verse 29. It says, for they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, and they supposed, or we can say assumed, that Paul had brought him into the temple. So these guys are Jewish people from Ephesus. They've seen Paul getting all cozy and brotherly with Trophimus back in Ephesus. And so they assumed that Paul brought Trophimus into the Jews-only section of the Temple Mount. Now, that is against the rules. Archaeologically, we know this. I think we've actually found some of these little markers, but we also see it in the first century historical writings, that this little barrier, I think it was about 3.5, maybe 4 feet high, and it had gaps in it every so often so that you could pass through. But there were always the little markers next to the gap saying, any Gentile found beyond this point is responsible for their own death. And the reason those markers were there is because the Roman authorities had given carte blanche permission for a capital execution of any non-Jew found beyond that point. Lethal force is authorized. That's what they used to say in our military facilities. If you went by beyond that line, you could be shot without any questions asked if you didn't belong there. And so that is the area that Paul supposedly has taken Trophimus into. And so they've made the assumption he did that, which means, in their mind, he ought to be executed. The Romans should look the other way. Now, they're not going to. God's not going to let that happen. Verse number 30. Then all the city was stirred up, and the people ran together. And you know how riots go. It starts out small, but it just snowballs really fast. So people start grabbing this other people and dragging them together and saying, come on, we got to do something about this. And so they seized Paul and they dragged him out of the temple. And at once the gates were shut. Now, the part of the temple they're talking about is the area immediately around the shrine building. Sometimes referred to as the court of Israel, or the court of priests, the court of worship. Only men could be in there to begin with. But the only people that are supposed to be in there are those meeting with the priests for worship purposes. And so that's where Paul had been. And the moment this rumor got started that he had violated the sanctity of the Jews-only area, they grab him and drag him out of that special region of worship, and they slam the gate shut to try to protect the sanctity of that place. And then, as they were seeking to kill him, now, more than likely, I'm going to give you my opinion on this, they are in the north portion of the Temple Mount. That is, on the north side of the shrine building area. And they were probably dragging him, roughly, to the north to take him out of the north side of the Temple Mount and through the streets of Jerusalem and out the gate that leads to Golgotha on the north side of town, which was an designated execution area. It wasn't just simply where the Romans crucified criminals. It seems to have also been the place where the Jewish people stoned religious criminals. I think it was there that Stephen had been stoned. So I believe they were on their way through that crowded north courtyard of the nations, that is the court of the Gentiles, when they got spotted by the Romans that are on duty in the Tower of Antonia that is exactly on the northwest corner of the temple complex. And in the center of the north court, way up above the north wall of the temple, was the tallest tower of the Antonia Tower. And there were always spotters up there from the Roman presence, keeping an eye on activities in the Jewish temple to make sure that there were no riots and things like that. So it says, as they were seeking to kill Paul, word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. So some military trooper on, you know, his outpost duty sees what's going on, sends a flash message, sends a quick message down to the tribune, who is, tribune is a commander of 1,000. That's the literal meaning of it. But a cohort is typically referred to as about 100 legionaries. So, excuse me, 600 legionaries. So six different 100-man units always demands to have a tribune. And so this guy is in charge of the security of the city of Jerusalem. And so he at once took soldiers, what we'll call them a quick reaction force, QRF, and centurions, because he's got more than a couple of hundred soldiers that he's taking with him. He at once took soldiers and centurions, and he ran down to them. And when they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. So here comes the police, basically. Here comes a couple of hundred different Roman soldiers into the north courtyard of the Gentiles. And immediately, all the rioters that are trying to cause all this turmoil, they scatter. They get out of the way. Because Roman security forces carried with them little clubs that they could use as a non-lethal means of putting a stop to riots. So the tribune came up. He arrested Paul, and he ordered him to be bound with two chains, and he inquired who he was and what he had done. Now, later we'll find out that he's starting to make some assumptions on his way down to this chaotic area. He assumes that the person is a religious troublemaker and that he's going to be the one that needs to be dealt with. So he immediately has him confined, puts him in chains, doesn't ask him who he was. Instead, he starts asking around to other people, who is this guy? What's he been up to? And some of the crowd were shouting one thing, some were shouting another, and he could not learn the facts because of the uproar, and so he ordered him to be brought into the barracks. The barracks there is a reference to the Tower of Antonia, which, as I already said, is immediately north of the northwest corner of the Temple Mount. There's a north wall of the temple complex. Then I believe there was a big public street that went east and west, just on the other side of that north wall. And then there was the Tower of Antonia, which took up about half of the width of the north wall of the temple complex. And there was at least one, perhaps more, bridges that went across that street from the Tower of Antonia complex to the Temple Mount complex. What's going to happen is this QRF, this quick reaction force, has come down across those bridges into the temple complex, grabbed the Apostle Paul, put him in chains. Now they're turning around and they're trying to take him back out and up the stairs and across the bridge into the security of the praetorium. Now, when he had come to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the crowd, for the mob of the people followed, crying out, "Away with him!" So once they actually get him into their custody, the QRF, the Quick Reaction Force, is trying to get back out of the temple complex. They're trying to get up the steps to the top of the wall, the north wall of the temple complex, so that they can go across one of their security bridges. And the people are not shy anymore. They're now feeling more like surrounding the Roman soldiers and demanding that this guy be killed. And this is a little scary, I think, for the Quick Reaction Force. And then Paul does something that helps us understand a little bit what's going on in the tribune's mind. And this is where we'll stop today. Verse 37, Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, and he said to the tribune, "May I say something to you?" And the guy says back to him, "You know Greek? Aren't you the Egyptian?" And so this is where we find out that the guy assumed that Paul was a recent violator of the temple that had escaped.